free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome. It is March the 6th, 2020, the 184th anniversary of the Battle of the Alamo. We'll talk about that a little bit today. We had the Boston Massacre yesterday. It seems like there's a trend here. They're coming for the guns. And of course, they were coming for the guns at Concord and Lexington, but it was the shooting of the citizens in the Boston Massacre that really escalated events there. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Alamo. We'll talk about the battle itself, but also we'll talk about Santa Anna. Was he better or worse than our government today? So that's coming up. But we're also going to talk about the Democrats and the push for Biden that we saw over the weekend. As I tweeted out, talking about the show today, you've got the DNC, all the DNC establishment. You've got the Obamas big time. I'm going to show you the hand of Obama behind all this. I mean, they're even pulling out Austin Powers to endorse this man of mystery, Joe Biden. And it is a mystery how he is still in the race. He is a very convenient puppet. And quite frankly, as we see all this talk coming out from various people, Cecile Richards, Planned Parenthood, former Planned Parenthood president, said, we must have a woman on the ticket. Oh, really? Well, if you hadn't killed tens of millions of them with Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood, Cecile, you'd have a lot more to choose from. As a matter of fact, most of these, a lot of them, I should say, would be in their 50s now. So you'd have a big pool of women because, about half of the babies that you killed were women with Roe v. Wade, with Planned Parenthood. So you kind of narrowed the pool down there quite a bit. But we're going to take a look at what I think is going on here. I think this is a move, in my opinion, for Michelle Obama. I never believed that she was going to throw her hat in the ring, even in a brokered convention, for this election, that she and Obama, Barack, were clever enough to wait until there was not an incumbent in office. But I tell you, I think that if she were to get in as vice president, it would be pretty much a slam dunk for her to run again 4 years from now. She might even be an incumbent, given the mental condition of Joe Biden. And we've got a clip going back to when he ran for president in 2007. At that point in time, he was 65, 66, something around there, maybe 64. He might have been as young as 64. Very sharp. It's amazing, after not having seen him that sharp, to see him in a debate. And I'm going to play that for you. And it is stunning, the cognitive decline of Joe Biden when you look at it going back. Well, the Dow fell yesterday 970 points, down 3.5%, erasing gains were made on Wednesday because it went up big. So it's been a roller coaster. We had airline companies hit very hard. American Airlines is down 13.2%. United was down 13.4%. We're going to take a look at the coronavirus and the crisis there, because now we're starting to see, we've had a hotel in Washington State that was bought by the government, and they're turning it into one of the first quarantine areas. But the people in that local area are very upset. The sheriff says there's no way that we can stop people from leaving that thing. And that's something that you should be concerned about. That's why I've said from the very beginning, you need to make the kind of preparations necessary to self-quarantine, keep from getting put into their clutches. So we're going to take a look at the many different ways that they're going to take a crisis, real or imagined, and they're going to make it much, much worse. And then there appeared to be an effort to abort Chuck Schumer on Capitol Hill yesterday in regards to his remarks about the Supreme Court. So we've got a lot to cover. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, March the 6th, 2020, year of our Lord, and it is 184 years since the Battle of the Alamo. And we're going to remember the Alamo today. We're going to talk about the battle, and we're going to talk more importantly, I think, really about what led up to it. And we, like I said at the top of the hour, we talked about the Boston Massacre yesterday. That led up to, that was the beginning of a lot of events. But people don't typically talk about why everyone was so upset about Santa Ana. This is not just Davy Crockett and a couple of guys who didn't like Santa Ana and wanted to make themselves king. No, no, no. Pretty much every province in Mexico had rebelled against this guy. And we're going to tell you why they rebelled against him. And then we'll talk about the battle itself and, of course, the consequences of that. But we're also going to get into the deep moves that were being made by the establishment to put Biden in front from South Carolina on to the Super Tuesday primaries, and what I think is really behind this, Obama. And then why is he doing this? Is it just because they're such good buddies? I don't think so. When you look at it, I don't think they're good friends at all, but I think that Obama has got some other plans involved in that as well. We're also going to take a look at the coronavirus, the aftermath of Schumer's threats to the Supreme Court, and even the idea, you know, what when they're looking at this, the idea that the coronavirus, what are we going to do to protect Congress? That's always the first concern, isn't it? How are we going to protect the government? Well, you better be concerned about protecting yourself. Forget about the government. Nancy Pelosi said, we can't vote for home. Well, yes, you could. That'd probably be the best thing that we could do. I've talked about that many times. But we need to be concerned about how the government is going to take this crisis, real or imagined. And it is a real economic crisis. And we look at the videos coming out of Iran, some of the videos coming out of China, indications that it may be a real health crisis as well. Real or not, they're going to use this and already have been using it to push the idea that you should stay in your home. You know, we're now going to be quarantined in our homes just out of a sense of fear in the same way that they want kids to stay in. You know, if you've got your kids that are out there, free-range kids, you get CPS called on you. Well, you know, just let's do that for the adults. Let's figure out how to do that for the adults. And then we can get them so afraid that they will not question at all mandatory vaccines without informed consent, because we've got to protect the herd. And that's exactly what happened on Tuesday's elections in Maine. People there are very upset about mandatory vaccines without any exemptions. And then with all the coronavirus fear that was put out there, the effort to nullify those mandated vaccines without your informed consent was thrown out. And that's going to be there for anything. It can be there for flu, regular flu, which, again, is a giant scam. But before we get into all those, just want to start with this program, this article here that Google has now gotten into completely programming what you're going to see and hear in terms of the election. They have now decided that they are not going to run Trump and Sanders ads, just like that. And they don't have to give a reason, just like they never gave a reason for shutting down this program and for shutting down all of my work, which had been up without any hits on them, without any complaints or notification of rule violations for years. I had a channel that had been up since I had started here at InfoWars, and they completely flushed that as well. Never had a complaint on it. Never got an answer from them. I got an email that was sent to me over 8,000 times, once every 10 to 15 minutes for a couple of months. And it said, a complaint has been received and your channel has been terminated. They would never reply. I replied to that. I did everything to fill out questions, that their forms and so forth. They would never give me an answer. A single complaint, is that their rule? A single complaint and you're shut down, you're flushed, years worth of work? Well, you know, they have their rules. And since they make the rules, they're the rulers. And they are ruling what Bernie Sanders and President Trump can say. Do you think it's because they are the most non-establishment candidates? Of course it is. Alphabet, Google declined to comment, so it's impossible to know exactly what rules are broken. But they say they have policies against making false claims in political ads. Now look, that is the oldest game in the book. That's always where the debate is. You shut down that on the basis, you shut down ads on the basis, well, I don't believe your ad. Well, you basically just censored all political debate. Because everybody is always calling the other person's information and their policies false. You know, what you said about me is false. What you said about this and that is false. They always disagree about that. So Bloomberg got away on Facebook with actually hiring bots, hired people. They weren't algorithms or programs, but they were. He openly was paying for influencers on Instagram. And they kind of worked with that. They said, well, let's see, we'll call that, we'll call it advertisements. Yeah, that's the ticket. And we'll say that it's sponsored content. And so we won't talk about that being a political ad. And we won't apply any of our censorship issues to that. And it's kind of interesting that as Google is shutting down political ads from President Trump and Bernie Sanders, a judge has now just dismissed Tulsi Gabbard's $50 million lawsuit against Google. You remember that? Remember the early debate? It was the very first one, actually. And she did very well in that debate, even though she only got like one or two opportunities to speak. It was very powerful. And everybody was searching for information about Tulsi Gabbard, and they blocked people getting directed to her site. They shut it down. And so she sued them. She accused Google of infringing on her free speech by suspending her advertising account. It was still available, interestingly enough, outside of the United States. Google shut it down inside the United States. And they did it for a couple of days, and then they restored it when people were no longer looking for her because of what had happened in the debate. They did everything they could to keep people from discovering who she was. So they blocked her ad shortly after the first Democrat debate. Her lawsuit cited two Breitbart news items that demonstrated the company's political bias. It also highlighted a Google tape, a recording of Google executives who were dismayed in reaction to President Trump's victory in the 2016 election. And they leaked emails showing senior Google employees trying to remove ad revenue from Breitbart. So even though she had all that evidence, look, you know, they said they're going to got to do something to make sure that President Trump doesn't advance. And we did everything that we could to try to help Hillary. I don't know how this happened. Remember that tape? And remember how before the 2018 election, they were able to shut down InfoWars, and 2 months later, they shut down 800 sites, most of them Trump supporters, pretty much all of them against the military-industrial complex and its endless wars, which is, you know, where Tulsi Gabbard is. That's where the popularity in terms of why people are looking for her, the questions that she was able to answer. So we know exactly where these people are coming from. I mean, you look at Tulsi Gabbard, she's not opposing them on any of these woke Democrat issues. It's one of the reasons I don't support Tulsi Gabbard. She's excellent in terms of confronting the endless foreign wars, but she's for open borders and she's for all the, you know, she's for abortion, all the intersectional feminism and LGBT stuff and everything. So it's not any of that stuff, folks. The way you get purged by Google and the Silicon Valley censors is if you talk about the surveillance state, the police state, and especially our endless wars. That should tell you who owns the government. It should also tell you that what I've been telling you about DARPA and the military-industrial complex setting these people up in order to censor is exactly the center of all this. All the rest of the stuff about hate and sexism, that is just a beard. We'll be right back. to uncover a little bit of espionage that happened over the weekend to put Joe Biden forward. It looks like Obama, not just the DNC, but Obama himself was pulling out all the stops to push Joe Biden forward. And we're going to look at why that might be. As a matter of fact, I think they've even pulled Austin Powers out of cryogenic storage. Take a look at this. We had Valerie Jarrett from the Obama administration going on TV. And look at this. That's Valerie Jarrett on the left, and that's Austin Powers on the right. You can't tell the difference between them. Now, am I going to get kicked off of the air because I compare Valerie Jarrett to Austin Powers? Am I going to get the Roseanne Barr treatment here? Sexist. I don't know. How are they going to spin this? I mean, you just can't unsee that, can you? But I think the person that they really pulled out of cryogenic storage is Joe Biden. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But why did he surge so much at the last minute? Here's a guy who's been, you know, lingering at the bottom of the polls when they had the caucuses and so forth leading up to this. We had New Hampshire, we had Iowa, we had Nevada, and Joe's down at fourth and fifth place in all these different contests. Yeah, they kept telling us in the national polls, oh, look, you know, he's leading the country, kind of. You know, Biden is there, but Bernie's getting a little bit closer. Now Bernie is slightly ahead, whatever. These are the national polls that told us that President Trump didn't have a chance to win last time. And you don't win with national polls. You win one election at a time. And, of course, Obama never called anybody who won those first three contests in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada. They didn't get a call. But when Joe Biden won on Saturday, he was the first one to get a call. But there's a lot more to it than that. As RT points out, Obama's hidden hand and Biden's surge tells us all we need to know about what kind of president Biden would be. Because Obama is, as we look at this, looks like he was behind all of it. As the writer on RT said, most surprising to me is Biden's popularity with African-American voters in places like Alabama, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. This is the same Biden that in regard to slavery said he doesn't, quote, feel responsible for the sins of my father and grandfather, unquote, before suggesting that African-Americans don't know how to raise their kids. This is also the same Biden, widely credited with having a major role in the mass incarceration of African-American people, you know, the big prison bills and so forth. He even referred to Barack Obama as the, quote, first mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice-looking guy. You know, we didn't have any African-Americans who were articulate, bright, clean, and nice-looking before Barack Obama, according to Joe Biden. Bernie struggled to maintain 12% of the black vote, but Biden got 42% in South Carolina. Well, you know, Obama was very popular in South Carolina. That was the thing that put him out ahead of Hillary Clinton. And so he had a lot of connections there. According to NBC News, the hidden hand of Obama was what helped Biden to succeed. He allegedly even called Buttigieg before Buttigieg endorsed Biden. Well, it's not an allegation. It's actually widely reported. As a matter of fact, it was not just Obama, but you had Terry McAuliffe, the former governor of Virginia, one-time chair of the DNC, also a big ally of the Clintons. And Hillary Clinton may be in play here as well. We'll see about this. But Terry McAuliffe, right after South Carolina was called, went on to CNN as a political commentator and used it basically to endorse Biden live on air and to endorse the idea that the other candidates should now get out because he won one primary. I'm hoping tomorrow, actually, some of the candidates decide to get out, said Terry McAuliffe. But it was far more interesting what happened with the behind-the-scenes phone calls from Obama. First of all, even though, you know, the thing that was very surprising was the fact that Buttigieg jumped out before Super Tuesday, even though he'd done pretty well in the other primaries. And he had talked to Jimmy Carter on Sunday in Georgia. And then shortly after that, was when he got the call from Barack Obama, according to the New York Times. And it wasn't just Barack Obama, but Biden was also on the line calling Buttigieg, telling him, you know, Obama did not specifically encourage Buttigieg to endorse Biden, said the New York Times. But Obama did note that Buttigieg has considerable leverage at the moment and should think about how best to use it. And the New York Times should know because, you know, they are deeply embedded with all of these, this cast of characters. Obama allegedly implored Buttigieg to consider that his endorsement, quote, could reshape the Democratic primary, creating a more formidable centrist challenge to Mr. Sanders' progressive movement. Buttigieg said, well, I need a little bit of time to think about this. I mean, after all, he had probably about as many delegates. I think he had more delegates at the time than Biden did. Unless you look at prior to South Carolina. So he said, well, I need to think about it. And then while he was thinking about it, Amy Klobuchar said, I'm out and I'm endorsing Biden. And then that put a lot more pressure on Buttigieg. And we don't know why Amy Klobuchar decided to get out. Nobody is saying. Now, she might have looked at the polls and said, I don't think I'm even going to win in Minnesota. But, of course, that didn't stop Elizabeth Warren. But anyway, she has not told anybody why she dropped out or why she endorsed Biden. But somehow, you know, after Buttigieg sees this happening, he realizes that he could reshape the Democrat primary and he could get a lot more credit if he would actually get on board now. And then you've got Beto O'Rourke, who is very close to Obama, and all three of them show up in Dallas. Just like that. Who organized all that? Do you think that Biden organized all that? Well, maybe he did. Or maybe it was all organized by Obama. And then we look at people saying, well, you know, maybe Michelle Obama is going to be getting into the race, especially since we've got Cecile Richards saying we've got to have a woman. Now, they don't want to have, for example, the only person besides Biden and Bernie who is still in the race is Tulsi Gabbard. The only person, by the way, who is still running for president who is under 70. She's only 36 years old. But they're not interested in Tulsi Gabbard. And as a matter of fact, even though Tulsi Gabbard got two delegates and the threshold for being in the debate was to have one delegate, they're changing the rules to make sure that they only have a debate between Biden and Bernie. They don't want Tulsi Gabbard. It'll be too crowded. I mean, after having debates where they got a dozen people on stage, now three is a crowd. So when you look at all these narratives and you look at all of this hand-wringing about how we must have a woman, the question is, what woman did Cecile Richards have in mind? Is it Hillary? Is it Michelle? Because when you look at Michelle, she would not want to run against President Trump. Not this time, I don't think. But she could run in 2024 as a vice president. She might even be president by that time if she was the vice president under Biden. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Analyzing the globalist's next move. It's the David Knight Show.
You know, we just showed you that Obama pulled out all the stops. Even had Austin Powers, Valerie Jarrett, used to be part of his administration. All these surrogates talking Joe Biden up everywhere. But, you know, there's another aspect to Joe Biden, this man of mystery. It's not only a mystery as to how he got into this position. It's no mystery as to why they want him there. I mean, he's going to be very easy to control. President Trump already succinctly stated that. He goes, yeah, he's going to be off in a home and they're going to be running the show there. And I think it's really about two things. I think, number one, having people who are openly praising Castro and not just implementing his policies. That's the key. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, the rest of the Democrats, they will implement the policies of Castro and Stalin. And I'm not exaggerating because these people are putting in, along with the Republicans, complete surveillance that is far beyond anything that Stalin or Mao could have ever hoped for, any dictator could have ever hoped for, far beyond anything that was ever imagined by George Orwell. And they want to control every single aspect of our life. You've got Bernie out there, however, saying, yeah, I'm going to nationalize the power grid. And then we're going to shut down all oil, gas, coal generation. So what are you going to run your power grid on? What are you going to run your electric cars on? Of course, they're going to ban cars, but you know, you still have your electric car, but you just won't be able to get any electricity to it. So when you come out and you openly tell everybody what your plans are, like Bernie has and AOC, that is very scary when they come in and say, yeah, we need to make sure that nobody flies anymore on airplanes because, you know, they use too much carbon. And then we got to make sure that you don't have any meat because, you know, it uses too much carbon. Like I told my daughter when she was writing a paper on the differences between communism, socialism, social democrats, environment, and they didn't have environmentalism. They put fascism in there and said, look, just understand that all these isms are just euphemisms for totalitarianism because that is central control of everything and every detail of your life. And I said, you can throw into that another ism, environmentalism, because that's another euphemism, another beard to control every aspect of your life. They don't want somebody like AOC or Bernie Sanders because it's going to damage them down ticket. So that's one of the reasons they got Bernie out of the way. The other reason is they want to slip somebody in there for continuity in the number two slot. Is that going to be Michelle Obama? Is it going to be Hillary Clinton? So we'll see about that. But there's another aspect to Biden, the man of mystery, and that, of course, is Burisma. We have the Ukrainian court is moving ahead on an investigation. Former Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin has long alleged that he was fired because he would not stop investigating Burisma that was employing Hunter Biden and saying that it was at the insistence of Joe Biden because, you know, we've got a video of him saying that. And so the district court in Kiev ruled last month that Shokin's lawyers had provided sufficient evidence to warrant a probe and, quote, obliged the authorized officials of the State Bureau of Investigation to accept the ex-prosecutor's complaint and start pretrial investigation of the reported data. In other words, Biden's crooked Burisma issue. The ruling does not mention Biden by name, but court filings by Shokin's lawyers that led to the decisions show that the former prosecutor had alleged, quote, the commission of a criminal offense against him by Joseph Biden, a citizen of the United States of America and Ukraine and abroad, interference in the activities of a law enforcement officer. But they have some help in this as well. And it's not coming from the DNC. It's not coming from Obama. It's not even coming from Austin Powers. I mean, Valerie Jarrett. No, it's coming from Mitt Romney. He's now going to be the one, as he was pushing forward to try to use this Burisma nonsense against President Trump. Now he is pushing to make sure that they don't go forward with a Biden Burisma probe. And I want to play for you the clip of what Biden had to say. See, he doesn't want to have politics. You know, we just don't want to waste any time on this. But he was willing to call witnesses and drag this thing on all the way through the election just a couple of weeks ago. But now Romney doesn't want anybody looking at Biden and Burisma. Isn't that interesting? Video clip number five.
There's no question but that the appearance of looking into Burisma and Hunter Biden appears political. And I think people are tired of these kind of political investigations and would hope that if there's something of significance that needs to be evaluated, that it would be done by perhaps the FBI or some other agency that's not as political as perhaps a committee of our body. We also have a lot of work to do on matters that are not related to Burisma. We probably ought to focus on those things. But I'm going to get the chance today to talk to the chairman and get his perspective. See,
okay, that's all we need to hear from this guy. What an amazing liar he is. This was the guy who was out there trying to round up three other Republicans who would join him to stretch out the impeachment hearings to an indefinite amount. And he wasn't worried about this looking political. He wasn't worried about tying up the Senate in political investigations. Oh, no, I think the FBI should look into this. Yeah, well, the FBI is part of the problem. Or maybe some other agency. You mean, Mitt, like maybe the Ukrainian court? Or maybe corruption is a bit of a glass house for Mitt. I don't know. what the deal is with this. But Politico says Romney could derail Republican subpoena targeting Biden's, because now all of a sudden he's had a change of heart and we don't need to look at what happened in Ukraine. Not at all. Not at all. But, of course, the real issue is Biden and his apparent dementia, because you've kind of gotten used to Biden. We used to joke about the fact that he made gaffes, you know, that I don't know if that was a gaffe or it was a moment of candid insight into his opinions about black people when he said, you know, for the first time we got an African-American with Barack Obama that's attractive and good-looking and clean-cut and clean and so forth. And people are like, what in the world is he talking about? And everybody said, well, you know, that's just Joe. That's just all this stuff about him, you know, hanging around with little girls and snuggling up with them and canoodling in public and all that. That's just Joe. He would give Joe a pass and so forth. But he used to be pretty sharp. And he was actually pretty sharp even at the time when they were saying it was gaffes. And I want to play for you, going back to 2007 when he was running for president that time. I mean, he's now run three times. And, you know, immediately as he won that South Carolina primary, the first time he'd ever won a primary in any of his three presidential races, the entire establishment jumps in behind him. But let's go back to when he was running in 2007. You will not believe that this is the same Joe Biden. Video clip number one.
You want to get influence out of this, support my public financing bill. I have just nothing but public financing. The amounts of money we're raising here are obscene from all different of us. You know, we're raising, I'm not, raising, I wish I were. We're raising 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 million, a lot of stakeholders in that. A lot of stakeholders in that. Number two, my good friend from New Mexico. God,
can you believe
him.
This is Joe Biden?
It's a couple million people. Give me a break. You can pull that together. Pull together 300 million people. That's like saying, you know, I played halfback when I was in high school. I can play in the pros. A different deal. Third point I'd make here.
There, Governor Richardson's even laughing about that.
I'm saying he's a great governor. He's a great governor. He'd make a great Secretary of State. But he's not, you know. Now, the other part here is, the other point I want to make is, look, you have to ask yourself the question, folks. I love Hillary Clinton. I've been getting beat up because I'm always saying nice things about her because they think I want to be her Secretary of State, okay? And nothing to do with that. But let's be frank about this. What's changed to make you think that Hillary's going to be able to pull together 15% of the Republicans to join her? What's changed to make you think that John, who couldn't get the Patient's Bill of Rights passed when he was in charge of it in the United States Senate, was going to be able to pull over 15 or 20 people? So the truth of the matter is we got to get to the point, they may be able to do it, but this gets down to a simple, basic proposition.
All right, you get the idea. We're out of time. We've got to go to a break. But that was Joe Biden when he was 65, 64, back in 2007. The last 12 years have been very difficult for Joe. And it's uncomfortable to point that out. It happens to all of us. But folks, do you really want him in the office of presidency? Welcome back. How do we escape the government of the military-industrial complex? Because that's really what we've got. You know, as I began the program, I talked about how Google is now refusing to run Trump and Bernie Sanders ads. Why is that? Well, it's because they're not part of the establishment. Look, they're very, very different on many, many issues, but they're not part of the military-industrial complex. You know, Trump has not stopped these wars, but that's what he campaigned on, and they're afraid that he will. Bernie is talking about stopping the wars, and they're afraid that he would. Tulsi Gabbard talked about stopping the wars. So, you know, Google shut down ads for Tulsi Gabbard right after the first Democrat debate, where she had a dynamite performance talking about the endless wars. And so they immediately blocked any ads in the United States for her site for 2 to 3 days. And she sued them $50 million, and now that's been thrown out by a judge because, you know, it's okay for Silicon Valley to censor us. That, folks, is what I've been saying from the very beginning. They have been created as a beard. I've seen all of this being done with the Democrats and Republicans using third parties. They typically go to the press organization in the particular state, like they used to in North Carolina, and they would say, we want you to run the debates, because they know that they're going to run the debates and exclude anybody but the Republicans and Democrats. You can't have three people on a debate stage, right? I mean, who would ever imagine that you'd have more than just two people on a debate stage? And of course, all the debates up to this point have had a lot more than two people on. But now they're going to exclude Tulsi Gabbard, even though she qualifies. They're going to change the rules. They changed the rules to get Bloomberg in because they knew that that would be the end of him. They changed the rules to keep Tulsi Gabbard out because they know that'd be the end of Bernie and Biden. And it would further confuse things for them, because there'd be a lot of people who would say, you know what, I don't think I like either of these two old guys. So they will do whatever is in the interest of the military-industrial complex and the CIA. Remember, it was DARPA that came up with the internet. It was a psychologist. They knew it would be a tool of psychological control. Once it became practical, they created, openly created, the CIA did, their own venture capital firm to make sure that the right people got involved that would work with them to shut this down. And now they have handed over control of the internet. It is now the private property of these Silicon Valley technocrats. And they are using it like their own personal property. And they're using it to shut down any critics of the military-industrial complex, because that is the real government. That's why they shut us down here at InfoWars. 9 months before they did that, you had people from the military-industrial complex going before Congress and testifying, we have to stop this information war. We have to silence the cannons on social media. And they did it 9 months later. And then 2 months after they silenced InfoWars and Alex Jones, they did 800 different sites that were opposed to the military-industrial complex's agenda. You can very clearly see who's behind this, can't you? Anyway, so why are they putting forward Joe Biden? Caitlin Johnstone says, I hate to do this. I hate repeatedly writing about the obvious, undeniable fact that an old man is exhibiting obvious and undeniable symptoms of incipient dementia. It isn't fun, it doesn't feel good, but the alternative is to lay down and allow the Democrat Party and its allies in the media to gaslight people into believing that it's not a thing, as they're currently doing. And so she talks about how on Twitter, if you look up Stutter, you'll see all these people putting out apologies for Joe Biden. And saying, yeah, he's just stuttering. And she said, well, here's a definition from the Mayo Clinic of stuttering, and I'll give you the definitions of dementia and see which one seems to apply for Joe Biden. Well, when we talk about stuttering or stammering, that's difficulty starting a particular word or phrase or sentence. It's prolonging a word or sounds within a word, or repeating a sound, a syllable, or a word, a brief silence for certain syllables or words, the addition of extra words such as that type of thing. That's not really what he sounds like, is it? But here's the definition of, or the symptoms for dementia. Memory loss. Difficulty communicating or finding words. Difficulty with visual spatial abilities, such as getting lost while driving. Well, the rest of these, we can't really tell. We don't know if he's getting lost while he's driving because he's being chauffeured around. We do know that along with all the rest of the Democrats, regardless of their age, is he has difficulty reasoning or problem solving, and he has difficulty with planning and organizing when it's not about their own political career. Nevertheless, they have decided that they're going to plan, organize our society from a central location. Confusion, disorientation. Let's play for you a little bit of a clip here. I just played for you Joe Biden back in 2007 when he was 65, 64. And then let's play for you some of the stuff that's happening now, 12 years later, when he's about 77. Kind of a greatest hits here. Let's just roll a little bit of this. It's fairly long, quite frankly, long enough that I'm not going to play all of them. But let's begin a little bit of video clip number two.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by go. You know the thing. Tomorrow's Superstar Tuesday.
All right, Chuck. Thank you very much.
All right. It's Chris, but anyway.
My name's Joe Biden. I'm a Democratic candidate for the United States Senate.
look me over. If you like what you see, help out. If not, vote for the other by.
I love this place. I love, look, what's not to like about Vermont?
One of the things I'm proud of
is in New Hampshire.
It's getting passed, getting moved, getting control of the Paris Climate Accord. I'm the guy that came back after meeting with Deng Xiaoping and making the case that
Deng Xiaoping
I
died
China
years
would
before.
Join if we put pressure on them.
You had people like Margaret Thatcher, excuse me, you had people like the former chairman and leader of the party in Germany.
Go to Joe 30330.
Watch what happened with those kids from Parkland.
Okay, let's just stop that. I'll just remind you. The first two symptoms of dementia, the most common ones, memory loss, difficulty communicating or finding words. Does that seem to fit? And again, I don't take any pride in this. I mean, I'm not too far behind Joe myself. It's easy to overlook linguistic peculiarities, writes Caitlin Johnstone, when they're spoken. So I made a verbatim transcript of Biden's complete answer, exactly as spoken, in a town hall. There are no typos. Read it carefully. Resist the urge to mentally reword it in order to make it make sense. And here's a little bit of this. Well, they have to deal with the, look, there is institutional segregation of this country, and from the time I got involved, I started dealing with that, redlining banks, making sure that we're in a position where, look, talk about education. I propose that what we take is those very poor schools, the Title I schools, triple the amount of money we spend from $15 to $45 billion a year, give every single teacher a raise, that equal raise to getting out the $60,000 level, and on and on. Number two, make sure that we bring into the help the student, the teachers, deal with the problems that come from home. The problems that come from home, we need... We have one school psychologist for every 1,500 kids in America today. It's crazy. The teachers are Now I'm married to a teacher. My deceased wife is a teacher. They have every problem coming to them. We have to make sure that every single child does, in fact, have 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds go to school. School, not daycare. School. We bring social workers into homes of parents to help them deal with how to raise their children. And on and on. I mean, another... You know, going through randomly biting his wife's fingers. I mean, some of this stuff is funny, and it is funny, some of the gaffes that are out there. But when you look at this and you look at the verbatim transcripts that she has put in, you know, here's a transcript of an answer that Biden gave to a question at town hall. I'll just read a little bit of this. And so I was saying that, and what they turned around and said, Joe Biden said, in effect, they said that Joe Biden said that what he was told, that what the white supremacists argue that we have no problem, that our basic English jurisprudential system is not the problem. The problem is those countries like Africa and Asia and those places. They're the reason why we have all these problems. So they turn it around and make it sound like that. And by the way, the title of the article is the Washington Post, the deceptively something of Joe Biden signals. I mean, what is coming? And that's a whole bunch of lies. You get the idea? I mean, maybe this is why he won in South Carolina. He sounds so much like Ms. South Carolina. I believe that the Americans in the like South Africa and such, I don't know. Anyway, we got to take a quick commercial break here, and we'll be right back. Folks, take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. Prepare for the worst case. We're going to be talking in the next hour about how they're going to use this coronavirus, regardless of how serious it is. They are going to use this as the crisis that they always wanted. That's what you need to be afraid of. InfoWarsStore.com.
Analyzing the globalists' next move. It's the David Knight Show.
You know, the average age of the Democrats right now is 77 and a half, if you don't count Tulsi Gabbard. And they're not going to count Tulsi Gabbard. They're going to make sure that she's not in the debates, that she's not in the race. So, you know, you got Joe Biden, 77. You've got Bernie Sanders, 78. And stop and think about the fact that everybody was freaking out a few years ago about Donald Trump being the oldest president that ever was sworn in. At the time he got sworn in, he was 70 years old. And yet he's several years younger than both of these guys. Mentally, he seems to be in much better shape when you look at him. As a matter of fact, before Donald Trump, the oldest president was Ronald Reagan, 69. Now, there were a lot of issues about Ronald Reagan in his second term. He did struggle with dementia, and it was quite evident when it was there. But he was still very sharp when he was running for president and when he got elected at 69. And again, he was the oldest one at 69. Prior to that, going back 140 years, the oldest president had been William Henry Harrison. Kind of an interesting bit of trivia there. William Henry Harrison was 68 when he was sworn in, and he attended the inaugural parade in Washington, D.C. It was cold and rainy, and he caught the flu. I don't think it was a coronavirus. Wouldn't have been. Coronavirus is a generic term, but not the novel coronavirus of 1840. It was just a coronavirus. And he was immediately got very sick, and he died in a month. And his vice president took over, Tyler. Remember the slogan, Tippecanoe and Tyler, too? Well, they got Tyler only. Tippecanoe, there's a battle of Tippecanoe where William Henry Harrison had been had famously won a battle against Tecumseh, chief of an Indian tribe in Indiana. And so they were referring to that famous, at that time, battle, Tippecanoe. And I don't know, maybe somebody tipped over the canoe in the Potomac and he got sick, but whatever, he got sick at that inaugural parade and only lasted about a month, and so Tyler took office. And so he was the oldest president that they'd ever had. The average age of the presidents is 55 as they take office. And so he was 68, and everybody said, well, I don't know about electing an old person. So we didn't do that for 140 years till Ronald Reagan. He was 69, then Donald Trump at 70. And if you look at the youngest president, you have the youngest president that became president was Theodore Roosevelt at 42. He became president because the incumbent was assassinated, William McKinley. Then the youngest president ever elected was, of course, JFK at 43, Bill Clinton at 46, Grant at 46, also just a couple of months older than Bill Clinton when he was sworn in, and then Barack Obama at 47, sworn in. And yet here we are, you know, we're looking at a very old field now in the Democrat Party, but Biden is their safest bet because they don't want to have somebody who is openly praising communist leaders. It's going to destroy them as a party if they do that. So as a party, they have backed Biden. Let's play a little bit of video clip number three, because this is Biden repeatedly telling voters, this is how he establishes, you know, his creds with the Democrat Party. He wants to raise taxes. Of course, they understand this as raising other people's taxes. But here's Biden repeatedly telling voters their taxes are going to be raised, not cut.
Video By the way, how many of you did really well with that $1.9 trillion tax cut that increased? Really good shape, right? Really changed your... Well, you did. Well, that's good. You must. I'm glad to see you're doing well already. And I'm good. But guess what? If you elect me, I'm not going to have you. Your taxes are going to be raised, not cut. If you benefit from that.
What I'd be focusing on is eliminating the $1.9 trillion tax cut that he passed.
You know, people say, well, Joe, how are you going to do all this? Well, guess what? First thing I do is going to repeal this Trump tax cut. Oh, not a joke.
Yay, no
what
taxes.
What is going to be your plan?
Yeah, we won't. All right, we'll have more of that when we come back, because President Trump is exactly the opposite. He is asking the Democrats to cut taxes again.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, Joe Biden may be in cognitive decline, but he still remembers the core values of the old Democrat Party when he was there. It was about raising taxes. Always has been about raising taxes, right? And they used to not have to resort to trying to use the environment and climate change, and we're all going to die and the planet is melting down. They used to not have to use that. They just resorted to the old-fashioned form of demagoguery that socialists and Marxists have always resorted to. That's just envy. Yeah, how's that working out for you? You got somebody over here, they make more money than you, we cut the taxes, and they got a bigger tax cut than you. You like that? I'm going to raise their taxes. That make you feel better? I'm going to give you equality by lowering them to your level. How about that? I'm not going to raise you up. I'm going to lower them down. And so here's Joe Biden, just a few of his hits, the many, many times that he's told people that you should vote for me because I'm going to raise your taxes. And of course, Bernie says you'll be delighted to have your taxes raised. And he wants to raise them very high as well. Here's Joe Biden, however. Let's raise taxes.
What I'd be focusing on is eliminating the $1.9 trillion tax cut that he passed.
You know, people say, well, Joe, how are you going to do all this? Well, guess what? First thing I do is going to repeal this Trump tax cut. Well, not a joke.
What is going to be your plan as president to get us out of this hole?
Get rid of the Trump tax cut. No, not joking.
The first thing I would do as president was eliminate the president's tax cut.
So when I'm president, if God willing I am, we're going to reverse those Trump tax cuts.
One of the things we got to do is, if I'm president, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to end Trump's tax cut.
All right, that's the common theme. And remember, when Trump's tax cuts were on the table, you had Bernie saying he's looting the treasury. See, that's your money is their money. Yeah. Sue money, me money, instead of sue casa, mi casa. All the stuff that you work for and save and have, no, they're entitled to that. That goes to them first. And then, just like you hear many Republicans talk about, I don't know how we're going to pay for this tax cut and so forth. Because it's an expenditure, right? They almost say the same thing. Bernie is a little bit more obvious about it. That's why he's so dangerous for them. Because he says, you're looting the treasury. See, as a slave of the Washington plantation, all of your labor and the fruit of your labor belongs to them, and they dole it out to you like kids on an allowance. And so it initially belongs to them, and they can decide to let you have a little bit of it or not. And you had Nancy Pelosi saying, these are just crumbs. These are just crumbs. But she will fight you for those crumbs on your kitchen table. None of them want you to have the ability to make decisions in your life. As I've said before, obviously, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans, including President Trump, really care about the deficit anymore. So why are we even bothering with taxes? Well, you know why they're bothering with taxes, don't you? And they're not worried about balancing the budget. Never worried about balancing the budget. They keep talking about, oh, spend another $10 trillion here, $30 trillion there, $50 trillion there. There is no limitation on what either one of these parties spend. And they don't need to have Milton Keynes, as AOC called him. They don't need John Maynard Keynes' Keynesian economics and macroeconomics and all that nonsense. Oh, no, they now have the modern monetary theory, magic money. We just print more of it. You know, they just flooded the repo market. What was it, $6 or $7 trillion? Who's counting? I don't know. It's just funny money, right? And if it is of absolutely no concern, then why do they need to tax you? Well, they need to tax you because they don't want you to have any discretionary income. They want you poor. That's the only reason they're taxing you. They're not taxing you because they want to balance the budget or be fiscally responsible. They just don't want you to have any choices. They want you to be totally dependent on them. They tax you for the same reason they're going to take your cars away from you. Dependency. That's how they empower themselves. Now, President Trump, just recently, because of the coronavirus, all saying, we got to do something about this. This is horrible. Look, the economy is going to, and everything. And we're going to talk about how they're going to use this they've got a lot of different objectives. Of course, one of the objectives is to take President Trump out, the way they're using this. I mean, just compare the way that they reacted to this. Now, you can say, all right, if it's 3.4%, and again, we have no idea what the death rate is on the coronavirus. It could be 3.4%. It could be much worse. We don't know because they're not testing people. And if they tested more people and identified more people, then that denominator would get bigger and that number possibly might go down. But we don't know. You know, they're looking at it now and they say, well, according to the CDC, we have 0.1% of people who die when they get the flu from complications, pneumonia and other things. So this, if we're saying 3.4%, that's 34 times the number. But we don't know any of that is true. including the CDC's typical flu numbers. Nevertheless, they're going to continue to push this to try to come after President Trump. And just compare it to Ebola, where we knew that between 50 and 70% of the people would die if you got Ebola. 50 to 70%. Was there this kind of panic with Ebola? I mean, we were panicking about it here at InfoWars when they were bringing in people left and right to CDC centers when they found an individual in Dallas and they didn't follow any protocol and you had a city official go in there without any protection whatsoever, walk around, see, it's no problem, everything's fine. They're immigrants. We love them. And yet that was a disease that had 50 to 70% of the people were going to die, you know, depending on which country it was in. And they weren't panicked about that. But now you have the coronavirus where they tell us 3.5% of the people, and they're panicking. And so President Trump, trying to fix this, says, well, we need to have a payroll tax cut. He says, I like middle-income tax cuts, said Mr. Trump to reporters. I think it would be a good time to do that. If the Democrats would approve it, I'd go along with it. In a tweet late Monday night, President Trump said that House Democrats, quote, should propose a very simple one-year payroll tax cut. Great for the middle class, great for the USA. And as the Washington Times points out, this comes amid the concern about the harm to the economy that the coronavirus will cause. But you see, the Democrats want to use that as an opportunity. They want the economy to be harmed because then they can come after President Trump. They can use it against him. That's what I'm saying. I don't trust anything that the government is going to do at any level to try to alleviate this. I believe that everything that they do is going to exacerbate this, regardless of what it is. They're going to make it worse. They're going to use it to destroy any concerns that we have about losing our informed consent, for example. They're going to use it to destroy the economy. They're going to use it to destroy President Trump. And yet President Trump wants to cut taxes. He was already, before the coronavirus came out, he was going to propose a middle-class tax cut around the April 15th, tax day. Yet the Democrats don't want to do that. Because why? Because the Democrats know that if they cut taxes, it will help the economy. If they cut taxes for rich people, it helps the economy. If they cut taxes for the middle class, it helps the economy. And they don't want either one of those. Because helping the free market economy takes power and control away from them. And so then we look at Elizabeth Warren. You know, it's kind of interesting as she's still not endorsing anybody. You know, she was the woke candidate who nobody likes. And now everybody is blaming her on the progressive left. They're saying she took votes away from Bernie Sanders. As I showed you, reminded you, how she came after Bernie Sanders when he was in first place, accusing him of being a sexual harasser, just like she came after Bloomberg for the same thing, reminding everybody that she is a woman. And yet, even before she had her big losses on Super Tuesday, she was already placing below Hillary Clinton in the betting odds for the DNC nomination because she is even more bitter than Hillary Clinton. She still won't endorse anybody. Yes, her war path has now turned into a very bitter, bitter trail of tears. And they're not going to pay any attention to Tulsi Gabbard, the only woman left, because, again, military-industrial complex. We'll be right back.
This should really be easier than it is. I'm not here giving you a sales pitch. I'm pointing out the way forward, things that I've discovered that I absolutely know work, that if you well, listen to me and try them out for yourself. You will see how amazing it is. And then your support of the product we're selling will help you and will help us. And it's symbiotic. My friends, I harp and harp and harp about iodine because it's the good halogen. Fluoride's the bad halogen. And people told me about it for years and I didn't listen. And I'm so thankful that finally I listened to Dr. Grip like 8 years ago and started taking true iodine. Atomic iodine. We've got it back in stock X2, 40% off right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And I'm telling you, folks, get it. It's amazing. discover the benefits, and it funds the InfoWar, a 360 win. You can't lose unless you don't take action.
Defending the American dream. It's the David Knight Show.
And it was 184 years ago today. Battle of the Alamo. They were defending the American dream. You know, when we look at this and their efforts now to shut the Alamo down, they want to turn it into just, it's just going to be a mission. We're not going to talk about the Battle of the Alamo. Because, you know, it's racist. Just totally racist. No, there were a lot of people at the Alamo who were Hispanic. It was not just people who had migrated from the U.S. And as a matter of fact, it really was about Santa Ana. It was about tyranny. It was not about racism. So let's back up before that fateful day, 184 years ago. And let's take a look at what happened to that as we saw Santa Ana come in, because that's really what it was about. In May 1834, Santa Ana ordered the disarmament of the civic militia. See, he came for the guns first. And he did it for the civic militia. And, of course, people in Mexico, unfortunately, have a long history of tyranny because they have a long history of gun control. That's one of the things that I love about the movie The Magnificent Seven. You have the villagers who are being berated by both the federales as well as the bandidos. They're victims of both of them. And they've just had enough at one point in time. They get together some of their money. They're poor farmers. And they go to America and they find the seven gunslingers. And they say, teach us how to fight. They don't just say, hey, we want to hire you to get rid of the bandidos that are robbing us and blackmailing us. And we want you to be there to protect us against the federales. No, no, no. They said, you come down and teach us how to fight. And, of course, they got involved in the fight as well. But as you see in the movie, they were fighting for their own independence, the people in that town. But the first thing that Santa Ana did was he ordered the militia, the civic militia, the people, to be disarmed. Then in 1835, he replaced the Constitution with something that he called the Seven Laws. And at that point in time, he became a dictatorship, a dictator. They no longer had a constitutional government. They got rid of the militia, and he had a dictatorship backed by the military, which is what the Democrats are kind of saying. You have no right to have guns, right? No right at all. Who do you think you are? We've got a military that we will use against you to take your guns. That's exactly where the Democrats are right now. And, of course, you know, Beto O'Rourke, when he endorsed Joe Biden, Joe Biden said he's going to be my gun guy because he said, you know, you can't have that AR-15. You can't have any of these weapons, we're going to confiscate those. I mean, Eric Swalwell, we got nuclear weapons. Joe Biden himself saying, we've got jets, we'll use them against you. We will use our military might against you. You have no militia. You have no right as an individual to own guns. Well, they sound just like Santa Ana. And here's what he had in the Seven Laws. Well, first of all, you only got citizenship if you could read Spanish. And you had to have an annual income above 100 pesos. I don't know what that corresponds to today, but you understand you had to be rich and you had to be, speak that language. So he was discriminating against the people who had moved into Texas and other territories who did not speak Spanish necessarily to a great degree. Second law allowed the president to close Congress and suppress the Supreme Court. And then in the sixth law, they replaced the Federal Republic's nominally sovereign states with centralized departments, you know, bureaucracies. You no longer have the Ninth and Tenth Amendment on the Constitution. So that's the reason why the founders put that in before this was done. People understood the patterns of tyranny, the patterns of dictatorship. That was well understood. That was well understood 50 years before Santa Ana did any of this stuff, and even before that. People had lived through that. They understood not only human nature, but they understood the way that politicians and dictators put themselves in power and establish their power. That's why we have the Second Amendment. That's why we have the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. Because he replaced the sovereign states with centralized departments, and then the people who would run those departments would be appointed by the president. What do we have now? Our government is run by bureaucracies that are appointed. And we now even have our Supreme Court deciding whether or not the president can get rid of some of the people in this newly created bureaucracy. We have the Consumer Financial Protection Board, the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren, and it is a dictatorship. They have only one commissioner. And as the first commissioner left, the second one said, well, I'm deputy. I'm the one who's in charge now. President Trump said, no, I'll appoint the person. No, you can't. I am the one in charge here. I mean, that's where we are right now. So as all of this is happening, you had 11 Mexican states rebel against Santa Ana. 11 of them. Texas was only one of them. You know, we look at this and we say, well, you know, it's Texas, you had these Anglos and they were racist, so they rebelled against Santa Ana. No, not at all. Everybody rebelled against him, pretty much. 11 different states rebelled. Yucatan, Jalisco, and some of them set up their own governments. You had the Republic of the Rio Grande. You had the Republic of Yucatan. You had the Republic of Texas, and only the Texans won. Only the Texans were able to defeat it. As a matter of fact, one of the militias and the largest and best supplied to the Mexican states, it was led by Francisco Garcia Salinas. They were well armed with 7.53 caliber British Brown Bess muskets and Baker rifles. But after 2 hours of combat, Santa Ana's Army of Operations defeated them and took almost 3,000 prisoners. And then he goes to the Alamo. And one of the things that he had learned in the colonial armies that he had served in as they were putting down rebellions, he learned that the lesson that he learned was to be ruthless. And so as the people in the Alamo held out for 13 days, when they were finally overrun, you had 189 patriots who held out for 13 days, held back 4,000 troops. And again, they knew they were going to die. Colonel Travis even wrote a letter to the people of Texas, fellow citizens and compatriots, "I'm besieged by 1,000 or more Mexicans under Santa Ana. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison will be put to the sword. I've answered the demand with a cannon shot." They knew. They knew they were going to be killed. And he did it to make an example. As a matter of fact, after the war, he offered as an apology. He said, well, I did it because they were rude to me. I mean, he literally said that. Literally said that. Santa Ana believed that Travis was overly rude and disrespectful toward him. In his letter, he stated that the disrespect of Travis led to the demise of all of his followers. It's his fault. He talked back to me. How dare you talk back to me? This is the kind of arrogance that we see from our leaders right now. Right now. The same structures, the same political structures, the same tactics, the suspension of law, the confiscation of weapons, the establishment of bureaucracies that are under centralized control. We'll be right back.
Tax the rich, feed the poor, tell their own rich no more.
You are listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're just talking about the 184th anniversary of the Battle of the Alamo. 189 men died. All of them died. All of them put to the sword. And that was only the beginning of the tyranny of Santa Ana. I told you how it started, how he shut down the citizen militias, how he overthrew the Constitution, how he instituted dictatorial power with a military, made himself a dictator with the support of the military, exactly what the Democrats are talking about now, and then set up a bureaucracy where he would appoint the people and control everything. And as you had 11 different states rebel. Three of them set up governments. They kept the rebellion going on long enough that they set up governments. But he basically shut down by force all of them except Texas as he killed everybody at the Battle of the Alamo, saying that it was because Colonel Travis was disrespectful. It was his fault. He had to kill everybody because he'd been disrespected. That's the kind of mindset you see there. And then he goes to Goliad. Of course, you know, that was March 6th on March the 27th. He goes to Goliad. I've been to that reenactment there in Goliad. I mean, the fort still stands. And the people that had been captured there, after they held them prisoner for a while, and they reenact this down in Goliad, after they had been captured for a while, they told them, well, we're going to let you go. We're going to release you, take you out here. They marched them for a while, and they take some of the people, some of the reenactors, and they march them out, and you can march along with them, and they take them out to the spot where they basically shot them and executed them. And some of the, we know about this because some of the individuals ran away. A couple of them got away and were not executed. And that is why when they won this brief civil war that ended 21st of April, remember the Battle of Alamo was the 6th of March, it ended the 21st of April. It ended as the Texas Army defeated Santa Ana right outside of Houston, the Battle of San Jacinto. They were saying, remember Goliad, remember the Alamo. And Goliad was where they had the come and take it flag. And what was on the flag? It was a cannon. It was a cannon, military weapon. So when we look at this, Chuck Baldwin, I just want to read you a little bit of what he had to say. Remembering the Alamo, a great column that he wrote. He said, for 13 days, 189 brave and determined patriots withstood Santa Ana's seasoned army of over 4,000 troops. To a man, the defenders of that mission knew, that mission fort knew, that they would never leave those ramparts alive. They had several opportunities to leave and to live, yet they chose to fight and die. How foolish they must look to a generation of spoiled Americans. It's difficult to think that these were real people, he says. Davy Crockett, nationally renowned frontiersman, former congressman. Will Travis, only 26 years old, with two small children at home. Jim Bowie, wealthy landowner, property on both sides of the Rio Grande. Colonel Dickinson, a 36-year-old blacksmith and artillery captain, one of the very last men to die at the Alamo and whose young wife and daughter were two of only three Alamo survivors. It's hard to imagine these people really existed, that they were real men. This is why they're so intent on taking down the monument. Because they don't want you to know about people who lived and died for freedom. We're being ruled by a Congress of Santa Anas. We're being ruled by military dictatorship. They've taken our speech. They want to take our guns. There is nothing these people will not take from you if you don't stop them. When are we going to have enough? So I don't know. It's just, I look at this and I look at the fact that we have gone so far that these people are tearing down the monuments of the very best people who ever stepped on this land. The monuments are being torn down. People like Robert E. Lee, people like the common soldier who fought to defend his country. And it doesn't matter, north or south, it doesn't matter. They'll tear down all the monuments. They'll tear down the monuments to Christopher Columbus because this is a process of conquest. And they're so far along that they are entitled to tear it down. And you have to understand when we look at our history, what was, you know, you talk about the, want to talk about the Civil War? Talk about Sheridan. Talk about the guy who, in the Shenandoah Valley, the rich Shenandoah Valley, said a crow won't be able to fly from one end to the other when I'm finished here unless he takes his provisions with him. He was going to devastate it. You had Sherman, who went through a process of devastation. What did these heroes, like Sherman and Sheridan and Custer, what did they do after the Civil War? Were they altruistic crusaders fighting for the rights of man? No, not at all. After the Civil War, these people went out west. And Sheridan, same guy who said that about the Shenandoah Valley, said, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. It was a process of genocide. And the Indians who survived were put on reservations, put on welfare. Their children were shipped off to government schools. Now, in those days, they knew that they wanted to make a clean break. And so they physically removed the children to schools back east. They would ship them back east away from the family because they didn't want them to have the culture of their parents. But today, we see our kids so little. We ship them off to the government schools. We let them watch what Hollywood wants to program them with. We might as well have sent them to a boarding school back east. That's exactly what is happening. And that model that we used for the Indian reservations is being used against you right now. You know, we've seen the welfare state decimate inner city blacks, accustom them to a life of poverty, telling them, we're coming here to help you, right? You've seen Anthony Burgess talk about how they had a burgeoning society, they had entrepreneurs and so forth, and then the welfare state came in, and they wanted dependency. And that's exactly what they were able to get with their welfare state. That was what they were able to get with their reservations. You might suspect something if they were to lock you up. But, you know, if they just hand you all this money and keep you poor and tell you to, don't worry. You don't want to have a family here. You know, we'll be your daddy, that type of thing. But we're getting to the point. We're going to talk about this coming up where they are going to lock you away. I think that is what we're being conditioned for at this very moment, for the quarantines. And they can do it under any kind of excuse. But now they've got a good one, they think. They've got a coronavirus, which, again, only 3.4% compared to Ebola, 50-60%. But you weren't quite ready, I guess, at the time a few years ago to go into quarantine. So now they're going to roll this out. We'll talk about how they're going to use this coming up. Before we go to break, I just want to remind you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's the only thing that keeps this program on the air, the products that you buy there. And, of course, you can still get storable food. It went up to a nine-week waiting period, and I just got word from the warehouse that they're back down to 8 weeks. So they pulled that down by a week. We're starting to get some more supplies in, so take a look at the products at InfoWarsStore.com. If you're going to quarantine, you want to make sure that you are quarantining yourself, that they're not going to lock you up into their reservation or into their FEMA detention camp. Also, make sure that you've got products that are going to support your health. Make sure you are as healthy as possible. That is your best defense, being as healthy as possible and making sure that you can survive on your own. Clean water with water filters, gravity feed water filters, storable food, InfoWarsStore.com. We'll be right back.
I'm ready.
Welcome back. I was just talking about the Alamo. One last quote from Chuck Baldwin, as he remembers it. He said, the brave men of the Alamo labored under the belief that America and Texas really was the land of the free, home of the brave. They believed in God. They believed their cause was just. They also believed freedom of future generations depended on their courage and resolve. They further believed their posterity would remember their sacrifice as an act of love and devotion. And then this, Chuck Baldwin writes, it all looks pale now, doesn't it? Because as I was saying that, did something rise up in you and says, oh, yeah, I've heard all this stuff before. Yeah, land of the free, home of the brave, and courage and resolve and freedom and all this. Blah, blah, blah. It does look pale, doesn't it? That's why we have leaders like Bill Clinton, who just said having sex with Monica Lewinsky was, quote, to manage my anxieties. I can't imagine anything more divorced from the defenders of the Alamo than somebody like Bill Clinton, who defends what he did in the Oval Office by saying it was to manage my anxieties. Just relieving a little bit of pressure. Hey, you know, what's the big deal? Yeah, I had to explain it to my daughter, and that was a bit of a problem. You know, Hillary, who cares about Hillary, right? I mean, this is what we have become in this country. And I remember when all this was happening, and I kept telling my Democrat friends, this is not even about his affair. I mean, it should have been. I wouldn't have any problem throwing the rascal out for that. And now you got the Democrats, even though they're embracing me too, they, oh, well, it's okay. You know, this came out as part of an interview with a documentary. No, it's actually a hagiography about Hillary Clinton. I'm not calling her a hag, although if it fits, if the blue dress fits, wear it, right? No, a hagiography is a biography of somebody that hagios means holy, right? You just worship this person, right? And this is going to be a worshipful documentary of Hillary the hag. It's going to air today on Hulu. I will not be watching it. I don't think I could stomach that. Maybe I'll get out John Wayne's Alamo instead. But this is what we have become. I mean, it's almost funny, isn't it? But not quite. Not quite. Only in the black comedy sense. You know, like Dr. Strangelove. That's the kind of world that we're living in now. And to give you an idea, what do you think that Crockett and Travis would do, and Dickinson would do, about a situation where we have a government that is tracking and recording everything that we do? Dragnet surveillance has been around for a long time. We had one of the officials, James Clapper, look America in the eye and say he wasn't violating the law, the FISA law, wasn't violating the Constitution, wasn't violating your privacy and every ethical norm that we've ever had in this country, spying on everybody without any indication that you'd committed a crime. And now they're talking about how they've got an app for that, right? Not only did he escape perjury charges, they let the statute of limitations expire on that, of course. But now we have a Virginia company, as you saw in the Drudge Report. This is a company called Babel Streets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have become like the Tower of Babel, haven't we? It's got an app called Locate X. Locate X. We don't know who X is. We don't really care who X is. We will... you know, we're just looking for anybody, you know. It's a variable. And you can plug anybody into that variable. You can plug anybody into their surveillance grid. It allows investigators to draw a digital fence around an address or an area. By the way, that's a geofence is really the term. That's why I've talked so much. It's funny to me. I thought by now, I've been talking about this since the time Joe Biggs and I got into the Asymmetric Warfare Center in Virginia to show you why, ask why are they planning to occupy American cities? Why are they building replicas of American cities? I mean, you know, we want to train on urban warfare to fight a foreign enemy. Well, you just, you know, you're going to have the planes come in and bomb the city, and all you need, all you're going to be going through are going to be ruins. And so you train for that. But no. They were training to fight in an American city. They've got other places where they train to fight in the suburbs, other bases where they train to fight in rural areas. They have war games where they have the enemy is, you know, a bunch of good old boys in John Deere caps and so forth. This is our government now. Like I said, it's Santa Ana. At Santa Ana. But when we went there, got into that military base, broadcast pictures of that live for a couple of hours, I'm sure that did not endear us to the military-industrial complex. We were arrested for a while for doing that. But, you know, and now they have arrested our information by quarantining it. But I said at the time, I said, you've got to understand that the fastest-growing area of intelligence is geospatial intelligence, mapping where you are, knowing where you are, where you've been. That has been, they don't talk about that because it is the most important. They have the biggest conferences. You know, they have 4,000 or 5,000 people every year go to their geospatial intelligence conferences. The press, the mainstream media does not cover it. They do not mention the word geospatial intelligence, even in an article like this. They won't talk about geospatial intelligence, activity-based intelligence, predictive analysis and so forth, anticipatory intelligence. No, they don't talk about any of that. So what they do is they draw a geofence and they pinpoint mobile devices that are within that area. Now, once they determine that your phone is in that area, then they can go back many months and see where your phone has been. Who's recording all that for you? Yeah, you may ask, right? And this is an app that has now been bought by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, by the Secret Service, by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and who knows how many other federal agencies have put this in. Look, understand that you are their enemy. You are their enemy. This is all about controlling you, every aspect of your life. This is a war. It's already begun. You just don't understand it. Just take a look at the trade war. Oh, look, President Trump started. No, the trade war started back there with Henry Kissinger opening up China and the globalists. That giant sucking sound that you never heard because they never really talked about it. You know, Ross Perot talked about the giant sucking sound when he shipped the stuff into Mexico, but nobody was talking about China. And, we shipped our industry over there. Now we're importing workers to come into America and so forth. But when you look at how these people are focused, I've said it before, I'll say it again, 2030 is the date. They've got a goal. And this is not a wish list. They have a date certain that they want this all to be established. What is underneath all this environmentalism, the beard of environmentalism, is the smart city approach to put you into a high-tech reservation, just like I was talking about with the Indians. They want to put us all into a reservation. You will have geofencing. You just won't see it. And the only good American is a dead American to these people, because they're going to be hitting you with 5G that's not only going to destroy your privacy, but it'll destroy your health. You know, one of the things when we get into talking about coronavirus coming up, one of the things about that is they said, oh, look, we found that it gets into the nervous system. Well, I have reported many times about the work of Alan Fry, who has told us for 50 years that microwave energy will cause the blood-brain barrier to break down, and you will have transmission of toxins, of bacteria, and of viruses across the blood-brain barrier. It just exacerbates anything that's out there. By the way, I was told during the break that we've been able to get the storable foods down to 8 weeks because they have upped production. My Patriot Supply, who does a private labeling for us, and they make this, it's non-GMO, it's made in America. And in America, they have now added additional kitchens. They have tripled their production to get this down to 8 weeks from 9 weeks delay. So they're working as hard as they can. And folks, you better prepare for this, because this is just the beginning. I'm going to talk when we come back about how no crisis is ever going to be wasted by these people, and talk about some of the ways that they may be using this corona crisis, whether it is hype or whether it is a real issue. We've already seen the real economic effects of this, and there are psychological, there's a psychological war that is going on as well as part of this corona crisis. We'll be right back. Stay with us. InfoWarsStore.com.
Defending the American dream. It's the David Knight Show.
As we look at this app that the government is now using to do phone tracking, Ron Wyden, who was the one who asked James Clapper Are you tracking all American citizens? Senator, not intentionally, as he did that. Well, yeah. Look, I've said many times, very happy that Ron Wyden did that. Ron Wyden has been very good on this surveillance issue, quite frankly. He's one of the few congressmen that really cares about this. Rand Paul's another one. Now, I agree with Rand Paul on almost every issue. Ron Wyden, I disagree with on almost every issue, but I don't care about parties. I care about liberty. And if Ron Wyden is going to be on the side of the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment and privacy and liberty on this issue, good for him. Good for him. I'll applaud him on this. He said, he pointed out, the Supreme Court, in a landmark case that just was ruled in June of 2018, called Carpenter versus United States. Now, we're supposed to do what the Supreme Court says, right? Aren't they the supreme branch of government? You know, everything is in a pyramid structure. You know, all the states are under the federal government and all the federal government is under the Supreme Court. Isn't that true? Aren't they supposed to do what the Supreme Court? No. No, you don't understand who the true government is if you think that. I mean, that's bad enough. That's bad enough. And we have to end judicial supremacy because that's the way that they prevaricate to you keep this structure in. But you need to understand it's really the military-industrial complex and the intelligence agencies that are the true government. And they will do whatever they want. They don't care about the Supreme Court. They don't care about the FISA Act. You know, we got the FISA Act because of the Church Commission looking at abuses of the military-industrial complex and the intelligence agencies, the CIA. And then in the House, the NSA. And when Congressman Pike called the head of the NSA in and said, I'd like to see your charter. I'm not showing that to you. We were created by an executive order by Harry Truman, and I'm not even going to show that to you. Congressman, you're nothing. You're nothing at all. We are the ones who have power. That was in the 70s. We're way beyond that now, aren't we? The Supreme Court, however, said in as recently as June 2018, Carpenter versus United States, the government must obtain a search warrant to access cell tower location data for individual phone accounts. The court, quote, recognized that the government needs a warrant to get someone's location data, said Wyden. Now the government is using its checkbook to try to get around Carpenter. Americans won't stand for that kind of loophole when it comes to our Fourth Amendment rights. Well, the problem is that they have operated because of the Supreme Court saying that, if you're using a phone company, you know, going back to when we had telephones that were wired up and so forth. They would do wiretaps and so forth. You'd have to get a search warrant if you wanted to do a wiretap. But if you wanted to get PIN information, right? Oh, well, you know, that's something that is owned by AT&T. And if AT&T just wants to give that to us, well, that's their prerogative, right? It wouldn't have anything to do with how AT&T was tied at the hip with the federal government and the military-industrial complex, would it? No. They just want to help us. And if they just want to help us and hand over that information, then that's their information to hand over. And you have to understand that under that principle, everything that all of these Silicon Valley technocrats have, they're going to hand over. All of this stuff about Apple, no, we're going to fight the search warrant and all this kind of stuff. Look, they are handing that stuff to the federal government in the back door, left and right. That used to be the case with Apple. But even when it was the case that Steve Jobs wasn't handing the stuff over, they were laughing about the fact, they were laughing about the fact that it had become Big Brother. And then when Tim Cook took over, they joined the PRISM program. You can see it on the Snowden slides if you don't believe me. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
You Yeah, you know, as we look at this company, Babel Street, whatever, Tower of Babel, as in, it appears to me that the rewards for betraying your fellow man have gone up significantly since the price was 30 pieces of silver. These Judases patented their name back in 2017. At that point, they had $64,000 in federal agency contracts. That went up the next year jumped up to $5.3 million the next year. So, you know, betrayal pays. So when we look at this, not always, though, you know, because when we look at New York City, one of the things that they decided that they would do to start to roll out the 5G surveillance grid was they wanted to make it free. You know, you just opt in. We have these free Wi-Fi and so forth, free Wi-Fi hubs they put all over New York City. Link, New York City. It was put in by Bill de Blasio. He said it was going to be a critical step to having a more equal internet. I've actually used slides of this in presentations saying this is how they wheel you in. They offer you a free service, right? You know, Facebook, hey, it's all free. Just, you know, put pictures of you and your family and everything. Put it up there for the public. And then, of course, they don't need a search warrant for that because you've publicized that. And they can just scrape the information off of there, catalog it. I mean, they don't have to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles to get your picture. You put that there. There's more information about you on Facebook that you put up than, you could get off of your DMV registration or any of the government records. It's perfect. It's perfect, isn't it? And I think that they really kind of worked with Hollywood to set that up. I've always thought that when you looked at Big Brother, when it came out, I thought, what a creepy idea. Who would ever sign up for that? And yet, you have this generation that grew up watching that. And to them, these people became celebrities. And all they had to do was post all their public information, right? They had absolutely no privacy. They let a camera watch them and then broadcast that out to the world. And it's like, those people got rich and famous, and I could do the same thing if I put all of my information up on Facebook. It was a perfect predictive programming, wasn't it, to have that program start in the UK, land of Big Brother, move to the U.S., and we got Facebook at the same time. But getting back to New York City, they put up these kiosks, and you can just use them as a Wi-Fi hub. And yet the problem is that Google and it's kind of the lead tech company in this consortium of tech companies. This is coming out of Gothamist.com. I appreciate the person who sent this to me. They are now saying that they're owed millions of dollars that Google hasn't paid. For years, they failed to pay the city millions of dollars in contractual obligations. See, somebody's got to pay for this, right? Well, guess what? The big technocrats, not only are they used by the government to set up these surveillance scams on you, but, they're not really going to pony up and do what they said. And they had 1,800 kiosks sprinkled around the city. They really just kind of put it in the financial district for the most part so they can spy on the important people, I think. But nevertheless, they're not paying for this. They're not paying the money that they said they were going to pay to New York City, you know, for the free, quote-unquote, Wi-Fi. Kind of like the state of New York is now being ripped off by Elon Musk. He had gone in and said, got a lot of subsidies to set up the Gigafactory manufacturing batteries in New York State. And now they've been quietly moving stuff out of there. And state of New York may sell $50 million in unused Tesla Gigafactory equipment. Buffalo News reports a recent article that New York State officials are considering selling the $50 million worth of equipment for this heavily government-subsidized solar factory in Buffalo. Instead of being used to generate jobs and revenues for the company, the equipment that's being stored in various warehouses is unused by Tesla. Multiple Tesla employees have claimed there's very little production work being done at the Buffalo facility. As a matter of fact, There have been some people who say that equipment is being moved out of there. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why the state of New York is now moving in to try to confiscate some of the equipment that is not being used to produce the solar powers that they were subsidized, solar panels that they were subsidized to produce. See, Google and Tesla, that's what they should merge, call themselves Google. Google, Tesla, all these Silicon Valley technocrats. Again, remember, Joshua Haldeman was Elon Musk's grandfather. He was part of the technocracy movement in the 1930s. And he wanted to replace government with a technocracy. I don't want a democracy. I don't want a republic. I want a technocracy. You don't know what you're doing, right? Things to come, Shape of Things to Come, the movie, the book. That was exactly what was posited there. You know, the airmen, they had superior technology. They were going to shove it down everybody's throats. They were going to impose for your own good a system of peace. We come in peace. And if you don't agree with us, we'll blow you to smithereens, right? Well, his grandfather wanted to impose a technocracy. He was brought up on charges. He escaped a conviction and then fled to South Africa. And they are still establishing a technocracy. And even though, you know, they get these subsidies in various places, whether it's setting up spy kiosks in New York or whether it is setting up a solar factory, also in New York, but in New York State, they don't really have to pay back these people because they own these politicians and these bureaucracies, right? It's not, you know, stealing from them, I guess, because they own them, right? You can't steal from the New York State and New York City officials if they're actually, you've already bought them. I own them, right? That's the attitude. You saw that from Bloomberg before he got out. By the way, one of the articles I thought was really funny that I came across, Bette Midler endorses Mike Bloomberg, and then he drops out the very next morning. Maybe we should call that the Midler effect. You know, we got the Streisand effect. If you don't want to draw attention to something, you know, if you want to draw attention to something, you start complaining loudly about it like she did when somebody showed a picture of her mansion. Don't you show that picture of my mansion. Oh, really? Barbara Streisand's complaining. She doesn't want people to see her mansion. So then everybody starts looking for pictures of her mansion, the Streisand effect. Well, maybe we should call it the Midler effect. you know, please, Bette, endorse Biden, and then you can endorse Bernie next. We got to get all these guys to drop out, all the killer bees, because they're going to kill our economy. They're going to kill us as well as the Constitution if we don't put an end to that. By the way, I didn't get to it yesterday. I was talking about other effects of the elections on Tuesday besides just what happened with the presidential election. And because they have at-large elections in California and for Congress, it's kind of like a, you know, big hopper. Everybody goes in the hopper, and they don't have, you know, a primary for the Democrat Party, a primary for the Republicans, and then the winners oppose each other in the fall. No, it's just kind of an open primary. And what happened was you had nine different races where the Democrats, the Democrat incumbents, did not get enough votes to, they didn't get past the 50% mark. So they've got a runoff. And it's even worse than that because the Republicans were very close on their heels in those nine races, even in California. And in a lot of those races, you know, number two was a Republican who was very close to the number one Democrat incumbent. And then number three was also a Republican. And you add those two together. They are more than 50%. Maybe people in California have had enough of this stuff. I mean, you look at what's going on and I saw the Drudge Report video of, I didn't watch it, video of some guy eating his own excrement. I wonder if he had an excrement eating grin on his face. But of course, hopefully they're going to vote some of these Democrats out, even in California. Let's follow up on what happened with Chuck Schumer. Again, yesterday we pointed out that everybody was upset about the fact that he was threatening a couple of Supreme Court justices And he was, and it was a crime. I read you the law at the time talking about how it was a felony to try to intimidate a federal official, and it specifically mentions judges in the course of their work, a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison. And actually, there's other laws about that as well. there's another law, 40 U.S.C., and I don't know how to interpret these little squiggly lines. I'm not a lawyer. 6134 and 6137A. It is unlawful to utter loud, threatening, or abusive language in the Supreme Court building or grounds. And an individual who violates this shall be fined under Title 18 and imprisoned for not more than 60 days or both. Oh, well, that might apply, wouldn't it? You know, I mean, but he did try to impede them doing their work. He said he was just talking about politics, but I'll play for you again the clip that he had to say, and then we'll talk about what happened yesterday. Video clip number 7.
And they're taking away fundamental rights. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Okay, so Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, you will pay the price if you go forward with these decisions. Oh, I wasn't talking about them. I was talking about these Republican politicians that are standing for election. It was all about politics, right? That's what he said. And then yesterday, as you have Josh Hawley and 14 other GOP senators move to censure Chuck Schumer for threatening the justices, he comes back, and actually, here's a resolution. Senator Schumer has acknowledged that threatening statements can increase the dangers of violence against government officials. When he stated on June 15th, 2017, following the attempted murder of several elected members of Congress, quote, "We would all be wise to reflect on the importance of civility in our nation's politics and that the level of nastiness, vitriol, and hate that has seeped into our politics must be excised." And then he said what he just did. And remember, this is also the guy who said, you mess with the intelligence community and they got six ways from Sunday to get back at you, President Trump. Yeah, so much for Mr. Nice Guy. And then he comes out. He doesn't admit that he said anything wrong. He still wants to say, well, I wanted to talk about politics. It was just awkward for me. You know, I just, mistakes were made. Not by me, of course, but, you know, mistakes were made. I didn't do anything wrong. Mistakes were made. They did not come out the way I intended them to do, those words. It's the words. It wasn't Chuck Schumer. It was the words, and the words didn't come out right. Darn those words. They just got a life of their own, don't they? So mistakes were made. He kind of apologizes, but he doesn't really. He won't own up to it. And, of course, they're not going to do anything to him either. And then let's get to the reactions of Ilhan Omar, who says, abortion is a constitutional right. She actually tweeted that out. Abortion is a constitutional right. Maybe it is in her copy written in Somali, but not in the English version, Ilhan. Where is she getting this? And then she accused both Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. She didn't mention them by name, but she says, two accused sexual predators should not be deciding whether or not women have access to health care in this country. Are you serious? Two accused? We had the Kavanaugh hearing, which was baseless. But there were no accusations against sexual predation, against Gorsuch. None whatsoever. Oh, it doesn't matter. You know, unproven allegations and no allegations at all. You're sexist. You're sexist because abortion is a constitutional right. Constitutional right. Because, you know, the Supreme Court said so. No. And she also went on to say, our history is built on the oppression of black bodies. Racism fuels American power. That's her. Now, I don't know whose history she's talking about because she's not American. As a matter of fact, she shouldn't even be here. Let's show her how racist we are. Let's send her back to the dung heap that she came from. You know, she got here with chain immigration because her father got in, and her father was an open Marxist, a part of a Marxist government that had turned that area into a hellhole. And as I've pointed out before, when you immigrate into the U.S., the standard form when you come in legally, and of course they came in by applying. They didn't come across the Mexican border illegally. No, they made an application. If you make an application to become an American citizen, you have to say that you are not a Marxist and so forth. He was an open Marxist. He was working for a Marxist government. He was a government official. So he lied on the form to get in. He ought to be sent back. She ought to be sent back. Her husband, brother ought to be sent back. All of these people. I mean, you know, just let them work out who's married to who once they get back to Somalia. But no, all of America is racist. Yeah, both of these justices are sexual predators. They're sexists. And all of you Americans are racist. Yeah. Let's just send her back. Because we're spending about $133,000 per refugee resettled in the U.S. But, of course, remember when she came, it wasn't good enough for her. You know, escaping that Marxist hellhole that her daddy was helping to run. Coming to America. I can't believe that we weren't treated better than this. You should have given me more money. Well, we're given $133 per refugee that comes in the U.S. That's not enough for her. And I'm sure she's making a lot more than that as a congresswoman. Meanwhile, you got Lindsey Graham, always on the wrong side of every issue, pretty much, touting DACA amnesty to Trump. So not only is he pushing endless foreign wars and threatening President Trump, you better not pull out of Afghanistan. I'll become your worst enemy. And you need me now because we got this whole thing going with impeachment. Right? That's the way Lindsey Graham operates. That's what I said. It's good cop, bad cop. You got the people like Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell. Oh, we'll save you. But you got to do what the military industrial complex wants to do. Meanwhile, those nasty, those rascally Democrats, those bad cops are going to try to, you know, throw you out of office. But we'll be there to save you. We get so caught up in these personalities and we lose track of the issue. Here's a central issue that's being argued, and that is, are we going to kill women so that we can kill their babies? Are we going to ignore women's health so that we can kill their babies? That's the central issue that's being argued before the Supreme Court. That's why Chuck Schumer is so angry. That's why Ilhan Omar is so angry. I think what we need to do is we need to just abort their political careers. How about aborting Schumer and aborting Ilhan Omar? How about that? We got elections coming up. I don't think he's up for election, but she is. Hopefully she will be sent packing. But we've got, when we come back from break, we'll talk about some of the questions that were going back and forth. And I'll just remind you, as I did yesterday, I actually played a clip talking about this. This bill that these Democrats in Washington hate so much was put in by a Democrat female in Louisiana because she wanted to protect women's health. They're always talking about protecting women's health. It was signed by a Democrat governor. And the Washington Democrats want to destroy it. It was also supported by an atheist Democrat feminist who said, yeah, I really do mean that I want to protect women's health because that's what this bill is about. We'll be right back.
Move me on to any black square. Use me anytime. Just remember that the goal is for us all to capture all we want.
Liberty. It's your move. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Yeah, let's take a look at what was actually said yesterday. We had Reuters reporting from inside the Supreme Court some of the questioning. Both Justice Roberts and conservative Justice Brett Kavanaugh asked questions that, quote, suggested they and perhaps other conservative justices do not believe the Louisiana law is automatically doomed by a 2016 Supreme Court precedent that struck down similar admitting privileges restrictions in Texas. Again, in the wake of Gosnell, as I explained yesterday, where a woman died in Kermit Gosnell's quote-unquote clinic, it was a little butcher shop, she died. She had complications. They could not get the gurneys through the hallways and the doorways. And so in Texas, we said, hey, let's enact a law saying that you've got to meet certain codes, right? Building codes. Why is this so controversial? I mean, we had retail stores, and they had all kinds of demands about how big the doorways had to be. We had to have, sprinkler systems, and we had to have exit signs in case of fire and all this. You have safety regulations in buildings. Why wouldn't you do that in an area where you're performing operations? Oh, no, this is about women's health, they say. And you had, as I point out, Wendy Davis, Abortion Barbie, doing a filibuster to try to stop it. They didn't stop it, so they sued. They went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court shut it down in 2016. Said, no, no, no. You're not going to be able to protect the... This is about killing babies, and we're not going to let the health concerns of women get in the way. That's what the Supreme Court said in 2016. They shut down Texas's law. They don't have any authority to do that. But, of course, they don't have any authority for Roe v. Wade either. There's no authority under the Constitution for them to have an opinion about that. They can have their opinion, but they can't use it as if it were a law. It's not a law. It's not the law of the land. It is an opinion. And to quote Andrew Jackson, when he disagreed with the Supreme Court, they reversed themselves in 1 year. And he said, well, that's their opinion. Let's see them enforce it. And that's exactly what people should be doing at the state level. When they jump in and say, we're going to tell you at what point you can kill babies. And we're going to tell you at what point and to what extent you can spy on innocent Americans. And we're going to tell you what the definition of marriage is and all this other kind of stuff. We say, go take a jump off the cliff. Just why are we letting these people dictate to us like this? Why are we begging them for this? I mean, we shouldn't even be. I remember 25, 30 years ago reading an article about Switzerland, and they said most people in Switzerland don't even know the name of the president because it doesn't matter. He doesn't have any power over their lives. And yet I look at America, and all of the news is always focused on who is president. What is the president doing? Who's going to be the next president? Who cares? It's absolutely irrelevant. The real government is the military-industrial complex and the CIA. Why are we even focusing on this? I mean, I talk about it every day because there are freedom issues, and you need to understand what these freedom issues are. But you also need to understand that it is a beard. You need to look at the people who are standing behind the curtain, not the big projection of the Wizard of Oz on the big screen TVs that are put out there by CNN and everybody else. And again, you know, we shouldn't even care about who's on the Supreme Court. We shouldn't care about what they think about any of this stuff. And yet, because everybody in government, from the president on down, are all acquiescing to what the, you know, these judicial tyrants, these political appointees, the Nazgul, are telling us, then it really does make a difference. Why? Because we obey them. I've had enough of this, quite frankly. We need to stop paying attention to these people. We need to stop obeying their orders. We do need to pay attention to what they're doing. And then we need to stop obeying what they're dictating to us. And so as we look at the questions here, Kavanaugh asked whether admitting privileges would be constitutional if they didn't impose burdens. Are you saying that admitting privileges requirements are always unconstitutional, such that we don't have to look at the facts state by state? So are they going to go in and say, well, you know, you got to have admitting privileges. You got to be somebody who can... if you've got a patient and you're performing an operation, then you have to be able to go to the hospital. This is what the Louisiana law says. You've got to have a hospital that's close by, and this doctor has to have admitting privileges. In other words, he's got to be able to go there to treat his patient. He's got to be a real doctor, in other words. And you've got to have health care that's reasonably close in case there's complications. No. We don't want to do it. Let's go to the Supreme Court and let them micromanage this for us. And... then you had Justice Roberts say, well, I think the decision that we did back in 2016 is binding. Binding. And he repeatedly questioned whether or not Louisiana's law had the same benefits as Texas did at the center of that 2016 case. And then he asked both sides whether it was up to the court to pursue a state-by-state analysis of abortion restrictions. And, of course, the answer to that is no, this is none of your business. We shouldn't even be here because you're violating the Ninth and Tenth Amendment by pretending that you have the authority to tell us what to do and that you have the authority to tell us that we can't have health regulations. Are they going to go in and start micromanaging the inspectors for restaurants now as well? Is that what they're going to do? Because we don't have a 9th and 10th Amendment. Why? Because the Supreme Court says so. Doesn't exist. 4th Amendment doesn't exist. 6th Amendment, that doesn't exist either. 2nd Amendment, we'll have to see about that, but it probably doesn't exist either. 1st Amendment, no. The corporations in Silicon Valley, they own the internet. Shut up. And they can gag you too. Yeah, none of this matters, right? And so he asked them that question. And so the Washington Post is sitting there trying to read the tea leaves. Oh, what does he mean by that? What is this dictator going to say to us? This guy who wrote both, they should call him not Justice Roberts. They ought to call him Judge Two-Face. I mean, he's like the Batman villain, you know? Flip a coin. Let's see. Are we going to go with the dissenting opinion that I did yesterday or this other opinion? Is Obamacare legal or is it illegal? So we weren't going to call it a tax. Now I'm going to call it a tax and say it's legal. Anyway, according to the Washington Post, they said, well, that could indicate that he felt he could distinguish Louisiana's law from the Texas statute, or it could mean that he agreed with challengers that similar laws were doomed because of the court's precedent from 2016. Whoa, whoa. What is our Lord and Master going to say about this? I'm trying to read the tea leaves and understand what's on his mind. He's so complicated, and the law is so complicated. I can't read it and figure it out for myself. I don't know what it says when it says that if the powers aren't delegated to them specifically and expressly, they don't have it. That those powers are reserved by the states to regulate health issues. I don't understand what that means. I have to have them interpret it for me. And so, you know, we get to that point, and so then we have an article here. What would Congress do if the Capitol got hit by coronavirus? Because that's what's really important, right? You and I don't really matter. Do we have continuity of government? Will these people be able to be whisked off to some underground facility where they can continue on with the important work of government while we all die on the outside? I mean, that's basically what they're saying. What would Congress do? WWCD, what would Congress do? It used to be, what would Jesus do? Now, they're God. What would Congress do if they got hit by the coronavirus? And, of course, we just had Matt Gaetz wear a gas mask. You see the picture on the Drudge Report as they're voting on the $8 billion emergency supplemental bill. He said, the Congress is like a Petri dish. We all fly in from these dirty airports and we touch and selfie everybody we meet, and then we all congregate together. Yeah, I've said that myself, but not exactly in the same way. I always did feel like Congress was filthy dirty. It's all that money that they touch. You know, you get a lot of germs from handling all that money and that cash people are stuffing in your hands faster than you can count it. And Congress is something of a disease, a Petri dish in and of itself, isn't it? We'll talk about that when we come back. Pelosi is very concerned that they won't be able to vote from home. What would we do if they didn't pass more rules, huh? Welcome back. I was just saying, you know, when they're fretting about Congress being a Petri dish, you know, hey, we shake hands with people, we do selfies, we fly all over the place, and then we all congregate together. Well, that's true. And, of course, Matt Gaetz left out the fact that people are always stuffing dirty money into their hands. Quite literally, they're now telling people, the WHO, WHO, telling people not to get fooled again, go cashless because banknotes are dirty and they can spread the virus. And I said this, what, a couple of weeks ago? This is going to be used to push us towards a cashless society. It will be used, and of course it's been part of the war gaming for Dark Winter. They've done this a couple of times. They did Dark Winter, about 20 years ago, I think, and then more recent times, Dark Winter 2, the scenario was that this would be used as a weapon to basically trash a country's economy. They say, oh, you know, all that stuff, all those paper yuan notes that are coming from China, don't touch them. Nobody wants to have anything to do with that. But, of course, it's really going to be used, I think, to get rid of cash altogether. That's one of the ways that, again, they're going to take this crisis, real or imagined, and they are going to use it to advance the control structures that they've been planning all along, which is one of the things that makes me skeptical about the reality of this. But the consequences of this are very dangerous. I mean, we look at what's happening with the economy. We look at what's happening with shortages. When we look at what is happening with people acquiescing to the loss of informed consent, I mean, I can't think of anything that infringes on my personal liberty more than telling me that I've got to take medication when it's demanded and what is demanded of me by the government. And they're going to get people in such a state of fear that they're already accepting that. We have in Washington State, they have set up, quote, the first permanent quarantine village in Washington State for COVID-19 will be in the Econo Lodge in Kent. We also believe the city of Seattle and King County will establish three modular quarantine villages, West Seattle and North Seattle. Now, I want to read that to you again and focus on one word. The first permanent quarantine village. You have to understand the real danger, regardless of what is happening, is that they are moving the Overton window. They're moving your expectations in many different ways. And maybe they're going to just, you know, leave this thing there permanently. Maybe that, you know, those are the words of the of KOMO, Seattle News Organization. They're the ones who said permanent. Is it going to be permanent? You know, the people who are there in that area are not too happy about this. They bought this $4 million, what was this? This was an Econo Lodge, I think. Yeah, an Econo Lodge. They spent $4 million, 84-unit motel, $4 million. They're also adding, like, modular units to it at the same time. The mayor was visibly upset, they say, as the King County officials chose the Econo Lodge in her district as an isolation center for COVID-19 patients. The mayor said, there is no transparency on this. In other words, nobody told me. So the mayor is very upset. The police chief there in the town was agitated as well at county officials. He said the city cannot prevent patients from leaving the motel. In other words, you're going to bring these people in here. You're going to put them in the motel. But I don't have any way to keep them in there. It's going to be, I don't know, we could call it, what is this, a Petri dish? And that's why I say, when you look at what happened on that cruise ship, you know, the Diamond Princess, when you look at the so-called quarantines that are being used, you got to ask yourself, is this quarantine or is it incubation, right, when we put these things together? Now, they've had 11 people die in Washington State, as a report, but that's pretty much all in a nursing home. One death has been reported in California. That death in California has been linked to a cruise ship that is currently being held 400 miles off the coast of San Francisco. Just think about that. This cruise ship is so dirty that it's not allowed to land in San Francisco. San Francisco, where there's excrement all over sidewalks, where they just had video of a person eating his own excrement. But they don't want anybody with a coronavirus in there because, you know, they don't want to get the place filthy. San Francisco. The Coast Guard delivered a series of coronavirus test kits to this cruise ship, the Grand Princess, after 20 people on board fell ill. And if we, again, that doctor who specializes in infectious diseases, he said he was there with the Ebola outbreak. And again, Ebola, 50 to 70% of the people who get it die. 50 to 70% die. And look at the way this is being treated. But he said he was more concerned about this particular situation than he was that because it was so poorly run. Thousands of people are waiting for hospital beds in South Korea. And as Sir Hedge asked, did the COVID-19 just pop all the global financial bubbles? I mean, we've been pointing out for a very long time, every time I talk to Joel Salenti, he talks about how the Chinese economy, the real estate economy, it was a house of cards to start with. And we've created this gigantic financial bubble everywhere, you know, pretty much zero interest rates, negative interest rates in some areas. And Charles Hugh Smith writes, the lesson of 2008 to 2009 global financial meltdown was clear. Any decline in the rate of debt leverage expansion, in other words, a bubble, is enough to threaten these financial bubbles. Any absolute decline in debt and leverage will unleash a cascade that collapses all of these speculative bubbles and stocks, real estate, collectibles, everything. And so he said, we wouldn't be in such a precarious and brittle state if the global economy hadn't been ruthlessly financialized to the point that market dependence on central bank intervention is now essentially 100%. 100%. I mean, we have created a fantasy economy, and I think we're looking at, this is one of the reasons why this is so serious, is because, you know, we may have already, regardless of what happens at this point, regardless of whether they get this in, you know, under containment, regardless of whether it is more serious than the flu, if it's a very serious disease or what, regardless of that, from a financial standpoint, the pen has already burst the bubble, I think. We're already at the point where Wile E. Coyote has run off of the cliff, and he's been running for quite a while in thin air, and we have now looked down, and there is nothing below us. And at this point, the stock markets go, pew! And we already have today, the Dow Jones Industrial is down 550, as the headlines say, virus sell-off. And then the question becomes, you know, not only about our individual freedoms, not only about will a vaccine be rushed to market, but I think the longer term issue is the normalization of the idea that you are a threat if the government says so they can, could and should do anything to you at this point. And that's the thing that really amazes me, how we didn't adopt that kind of attitude when Ebola came here. But now we're going to do it with something that is a tiny fraction of that, right? A 3.5% fatality rate, they tell us, instead of 50, 60, 70%. We have now become such panicked sheep that we're going to do that. Now, the question is this going to get rid of President Trump? As one headline says, the latest attempt to prove that Trump is a chump. But then there's also the question, will it topple China's one-party rule? Because the people there are furious as to how this has been mismanaged. And they're speaking out about this. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, you know, China was able to kill 50 million people with a agricultural reform. There was no disease. There was no war. But they were able to create famine out of mismanagement from the central government. That's the key issue to me from the very beginning. When I looked at this, it's like, well, I see that it's a big problem, but I've been to China, and I know China's history, and I know what, you know, these dictators are capable of doing and what they would like to do. They see an excess population there that's difficult to control, especially the excess males. They had like a 30% increase in males because of the gendercide that came in with their one-child policy. Folks, if you want to make sure that you have protected your family, don't wait for Congress and Nancy Pelosi to do this. Make sure that you act proactively. And as we pointed out earlier in the program, our supplier, My Patriot Supply, we private label it from them. Storable food that is, will last for 25 years. Once you open it, you can reseal it for a short period of time. Non-GMO, made in America. As a matter of fact, they have now tripled their production with additional kitchens. And we've been able, even though demand is continually picking up, we've been able to get it down now from 9 weeks to 8 weeks. But make sure you don't wait any longer. Make sure you have clean water, water filters at InfoWarsStore.com.